When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Kick went forward and Rosie was onto the crumb. Kick to an open forward setup. Georgiades went to ground against Howard. But here comes Rioli. Forced the turnover. And Georgiades will walk it in. Rioli got to the back. Has footy in hand. Slipped over. Regained his footy. Doubled. Cut him back through. And snapped a quite memorable goal. Rowan Marshall sweeps the hand pass to Owens. Got under the kick inside 50. Here's Higgins. Takes the mark, left forward pocket. Higgins around the corner, takes the snap, nails it down for his second. And the Saints are only 10 points adrift.
Game still on the line, dispossessed. Horn Francis, no high free paid. Wines, Wines, the finest of Wines. Nails a big moment goal, the ex-captain. And that might be enough.
It was a fitting day for us. For our club to play on Anzac Day again and to play with courage is what we needed to do. I was pretty proud of the boys to get that job done.
Port Adelaide survive a last man standing affair, riddled with injury, carnage and chaos. It's a vital 4 points for the Power, but how high will the cost prove to be as the Saints slip further away from the eight?
Peter Wright twirls the footy in hands. Left of centre, not severe. 50 metres out. Right, launches at the goal front. Contact was sweet. He's made a remarkable return from a month out. Two goals for Peter Wright. The Bombers six straight. Faultless.
Bobby nudges him out. Goes and gets it. His 60 from goal. What's he going to manufacture? That is the most phenomenal kick I've ever seen. To Elliott. To goal.
Kicks inside 50. Elliott!
What a mark! What a theatre to launch like that! From 50 out, he's tormented Bombers fans in the past. It's a lovely kick to match the moment.
Gets it inside 50. Oh. Lakeford! He would kick this 9 times out of 10. He'd kick it 99 out of 100. And he's missed. Scores are level.
Anzac Day reprises the deeds of 1995. It's a draw. Can you believe it would happen again?
A memorable Anzac Day to be revelled in, littered with highlights and talking points. The biggest draw since the 2010 Grand Final reignites the extra time debate for participants and fan alike.
Did you feel the effort was where it needed to be in the second half?
No. First half I thought was fine. Second half, that's well below par.
What do you put that down to?
It's a good question. I don't really know the answer at this point in time. I have no excuses. We just didn't work as hard as they did.
And the woes of the Brisbane Lions laid bare in Canberra as the search for answers looks elusive for coach Chris Fagan. Are the grand finalists a spent force before the end of April? This is the Round 7 edition of Crunch Time. Can't remember a crunch time where we've got four games to work with. We are drowning in material and, well, the best has probably been played, but in prospect, the best is yet to come. Carlton and Geelong at the MCG later today. Jared Waitley with you for Crunch Time. David King is alongside me. Hello, Kingy.
Hello, G. Hello, everyone. I love this week. One on a Wednesday, a couple on a Thursday, one on a Friday. Can we space it out like this more regularly, Jared? It's been a haven for us football lovers, and it wasn't probably the best game last night, but as you said, we've got some belters to talk about.
We are across the border with Hall of Famer Mark Bickley. Bix, welcome back to Crunch Time.
Hey, Jared. G'day, Kingy. When you were talking about the anticipation of the best still to come, I thought you might have been talking about the Crows in North Melbourne, perhaps. alas, no.
We might sneak a thought or two to there, but in the divvy up of 2 hours, it feels like a lower priority.
He started in a really nasty fashion.
Oh, Kingy, you and I are the same, mate. We're in the same boat at the minute.
And Sam Edmund rounds out our quartet, and it's a busy time on the beat. Hello to you, Sam.
Big news week, Jared. Morning to you. Morning, Kingy. Morning, Bix and listeners this morning. But just there's plenty of time for that. I was taken. An all time Ross Lyon press conference last night. In no particular order. I didn't see it. What did you observe? And who's my personal favourite? And whose way did the free kick count go? I personally love. Don't play poker with Ross Lyon, ever.
I think we might revel in that before we're done as well. Thoughts last night, Bix, is some nights it's a high price to pay for victory, and that was Port Adelaide's reality.
Yeah, it was, particularly the quality of the player as well, because we know that Connor Rosie started fantastic. He's their captain. He's their fire starter quite often. And Alier is their best defender. And then Sam Powell-Pepper is so often, he's the barometer of that team. When you need someone to lay a big tackle order to kick a goal or to do some of the hard stuff, then he's often that player that does it. So those three players are really critical to Port Adelaide. It's going to test their depth, considering they've already got Ivan Soldo on the sideline for the next 3 weeks as well. So this is a busy period for Port Adelaide, and I'm really interested to see how they cover those players.
What is the toll, Sam, that we know this morning?
Heavy. They've paid a heavy price for this. So Alier, I know we'll spend a bit of time getting to the tribunal specifics with this. Obviously, he's in the concussion protocol, so we can put a line in for him next week at a minimum. And then only a few minutes later, Sam Powell-Pepper limping off with that right knee injury. Now, this one doesn't look good at all. And there is, I suppose there's always hope until the scans are done. But there are real fears here. And like so many we see, so innocuous, reaching to take what was effectively an uncontested mark and landed awkwardly. They're waiting on the scans. They are hopeful. As I said, it doesn't look good. Ross Lyon, in that eventful press conference, ACL'd him, which was a curiosity in itself. And then Connor Rosie, the right hamstring coming off, of course, landed straight-legged, which was a curiosity as well in that marking contest with Matias Filippo. So he's going to miss weeks, just a matter of how many weeks he's going to miss. And then St Kilda got their issues on the other side as well with Rowan Marshall and Higgins, who we suspect might be suspended as well.
It's a sort of toll that can wreck a portion of your season, Kingy.
Yeah, it can. And I think you've got to understand how important Sam Powell-Pepper is to Port Adelaide. Mm. He's a wrecking ball, isn't he, Bix? He's, yep. If you look at just score involvements, I love going to score involvements. There's a lot of meaningless numbers out there and a lot of junk possessions really to be had. But if you look at last season, Rosie, Butters, and Finlayson is the wild card in the ruck. They're the top three score involvement players last year. Sam Powell-Pepper was fourth.
Mm.
So he's a critical player at forward 50 stoppages. He just goes straight line through it every time, and he draws free kicks, and he creates havoc. So this is one, and their draw's a little bit sticky, isn't it, the next couple of weeks? The yeah. Crows, obviously, in the big showdown, which they get themselves up for no matter where they are on the table. And then they got Geelong in Geelong. So it's just an awkward time to have this run of injuries, but Powell-Pepper, I think, will have a significant impact on this team going forward.
In what worked for them is the value of resting Charlie Dixon the week before and sticking to their plan. Is he's the match winner up front for them last night, which to your overall point of managing players of a certain age or of a certain physical profile, is they got a huge dividend from the wisdom of that the week before.
Yeah, you've got to learn from, you know, history tells you so many great lessons, doesn't it? And Charlie missed a lot of footy in 23 and a lot of footy in 22 and a lot of footy in 2019. So managing him is a real challenge. And most of his damage, so we went back and had a look at what he does in his first three games, when he restarts from injury or when he starts the season. So if you just look at 2023, he plays around 1-3, kicks 3-3-3. Then he gets injured, rounds 8-12, comes back around 13-16 and gets going again. So most of his goals, 14 of his 23 goals, come in those six games. And so he basically kicked 9 goals in the other 8 games. You go back the year before, it's exactly the same. So his first 3 games are when he's fresh, healthy, fit, and at his aggressive best. Mm. And then I just think the toll of playing a little bit of ruck and a little bit he's the sole target down there, Bix. He's the one that stands under packs. And I just think you've got no other way of looking at this season but to keep him fresh.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And the other thing is when he is banged up, he looks banged up and he just can't do what we know he wants to do. And it was even more important last night because Todd Marshall's in a rut at the moment. He's down on confidence and that's being played out. When he does win the ball, he's, you know, set shot goal kicking has been poor, which is generally a really strong point. Georgiades, we can give a little bit of leniency too because he's just coming back from that knee reconstruction. And also, Willie Rioli, who was better last night, has been a little bit down as well. So, you know, the fact that Dixon was able to stand up, he kicked 4 goals straight in a team that was really battling in front of goal. It was a mighty effort last night.
They had an interesting night, Port, because they could potentially have put the game away in the first 15 minutes if they'd put their dominance on the board, and that might have just shut St Kilda out. And having failed to do that, they were in this tooth and nail struggle to get through St Kilda all night, and it lasted the whole distance.
Yeah, that was the greatest 10-point smashing I've ever seen last night. They brained them all night, really. And they got goals at odd times, the Saints, to stay in it. But no matter which angle you watch that game from, Port were always winning that game. And they, it felt to me, Bix, like they had total control for the first 30 minutes. It should have been a 7 or 8 goal margin. It felt like that. It wasn't. And I think the scoreboard lies. I don't want to hear anyone talk to me about the collective volume of how much St Kilda have lost by this year. Oh, they've lost 4 games by a total of 26 points. I don't want to hear that, because that just lies to you, that result last night, that 10-point loss.
Yeah, and Port Adelaide did control it for long periods. But once again, the inability to put that ascendancy on the scoreboard, it was exactly the same as the Melbourne game, where they had all the numbers in their favour, but Melbourne were good enough to kick 15 goals 6 against them and end up costing them 4 points that night, Port Adelaide. Last night, St Kilda just weren't good enough to be able to do what Melbourne did to them, so they got away with one. So that's going to be the challenge now for Port going forward. Is where do they sit? Are they a top 4 side? And for me, they have to be able to finish a whole lot better than what they have this year. It's been a bit of a bugbear or a crutch they haven't been able to get over the top of. And they kicked poorly in round 1. They kicked poorly against Melbourne. They've kicked poorly again last night. They just haven't been able to be efficient going inside forward 50. And their numbers suggest that, and particularly from set shots, which is one of the areas that is a little bit more controlled when you're having a shot at goal.
They're going to lose that steady hand at the top of the tree in Connor Rozee for a couple of weeks. You'd think 2 to 3. I think this might be a good thing to flush a couple out. So are you just happy to sit one out, one back, and not face the breeze? Or do you need to flush a couple? I was wrapped with Burgoyne's game last night. Thought he was really good, Bix. We sort of know Butters. We know Houston. We know Willem Drew. So they're solid contributors. I thought Farrell played really well last night. He's been a little bit – I don't know what he is. Is he a score involvement player? Is he an interceptor, or is he just a nice to have? Just a guy that if you give him the ball every now and then, he'll hit a high level kick for you. But really, does he swing games? Look, Lockie Jones did some things that you go, yeah, that's good. So they need more of from the midsection of their selected 23.
Yeah, those two players you mentioned are interesting as well in their back half, because the one thing that I sort of struggle with Port Adelaide is some of the really dangerous forwards are of that smaller sort of mid-size. Who's their lockdown player in defence? And, you know, if you're playing against Melbourne and Cozzy Pickett got a couple of goals against them, you're going to come up against the Giants, who have got 3 or 4 really nippy little small forwards. Charlie Cameron's going to be, you know, that style of player. Yeah, and I just don't know who that player is. They want it to be Lockie Jones because he's got the power and the speed. But he just hasn't been reliable enough with his disposal and with his ability to sort of stay close to those opposition players. So that to me is still just that question mark. Ryan Burton has been able to do that. He found himself out of the side last night. They preferred Dylan Williams in his place. So I still think they're rolling a few things around in that back six, trying to find a balance that is going to enable them to take on, you know, some of the better forward half player, teams.
The St Kilda side of the equation. So they lived the season inside the 8 last year. They're a long way back and chasing at 2 and 5. This was the press conference that most amused Sam Edmund last night as he visualised himself inside it.
You're a little bit disappointed with how you finished in that last quarter.
Oh, no. Did you think we weren't running and didn't get close? Or?
No. I'm just wondering. Could you have shown a little bit more dare in the last quarter?
Well, we sent a message taken. I thought we were daring.
Did you alter the way that you went about it at all, given their personnel issues?
Yeah, did you? What did you observe?
I'm just asking for your...
Oh, mine.
What about the free kick count,
25
to 10? Thoughts on that?
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't even buy in. Whose way did it go?
Theirs.
Oh, did it? Nah. That's not what it costs us to go. Ifs, buts, maybes, but I think the close loss is a reflection of where we're at. I think what is it, 8 points, 4 points, 1 point, what was it tonight?
10.
Right?
10.
10 with a 25 to 10 free kick count. But no, that's...
He was in very good form last night.
I could watch, instead of having North Melbourne versus Adelaide today, Biggs, I think we could have a two-hour press conference of Ross and it'd rate just as well.
So where are they, Kingy?
They're stuck in an awkward situation where they're really not good enough to take this group to the promised land, and they're too good to fall down the bottom of the tree, and he's too good a coach to allow that to happen because they don't believe in rebuilds.
But are they stuck? You use the term stuck. Are they stuck or are they evolving?
Well, what's the difference?
Well, one is stuck with no hope of any progress, and the other, the latter would be, they are where they are now with seven players under 21 playing last night and trending in the right direction.
Well, I think they're a better list than last year. So they're always, you're always evolving. But how do you get those high end, how do you get multiple high end picks or players into your organisation? They're going to have to try and, well, we know they've gone after Degoe. We know they've gone after, they'll be in for LDU. They'll be in for those sorts of guys. Getting one is the hardest part. They don't have a midfield torchbearer. That's what worries me. They don't have the guy. And Steele's a very good player, and he's as honest as the day is long, but he's not the guy. And until they get that player, they'll be here.
And that's the challenge for a lot of clubs, isn't it? And to be able to get those, and you need, you know, some clubs have got more than one, and you look at Port Adelaide last night, and you're thinking Rosie Butters, Horn Francis for the next 6 years looks reasonably attractive. Now, some of those younger players that you mentioned, Sammy, might move into that role. I'm really keen to see Matheus Filippo at some stage. I think he's only 18 still. Yeah. And so he's got the potential to do that in the coming years, but it's just too early to do that. But they look impotent without King playing as well. You know, so when he goes out of their side, they just look a much lesser side, and they're already not a high-scoring side. And you take that contested bloke up forward who you can, you know, kick it to him to get out of jail. And the way they play as well, you know, it can be frustrating at times because they get so far up the ground, and then often they win the ball and they get to the middle of the ground and they've got no one ahead to really shoot at. So, yeah, I know that what Ross is trying to do, and we've seen glimpses of it when it works and they get over the back and they're able to kick goals. But just at the moment, without King, it just looks really hard work in their front half.
So the night they were fully stocked was the Collingwood game in round two, and they did score freely that night, and they picked up so much injury out of that game, and they just haven't been able to absorb it. So they're right back in they're just a grinding team who don't look like a scoring threat. But that night they had everybody there.
Yeah, and they did this last year. To be fair, he gets them. People come at Ross because they said, oh, he sets the game up to not score. But they sort of set the game up to try and win. And this is their method. They want the ball in motion. They don't mind getting back to then charge forward. They don't mind using the full extremities of the oval. And I thought they'd have a better year this year. They've had a couple of players that really haven't come up. And I'm hard on Sinclair. He was pretty good last night. But his season's been down. Their midfielders, Ross hasn't had the same season that he had over the last couple of years. They haven't. I mean, you talk a lot about King, but he hasn't really gone bang and been that player forward of the ball. So, Owens is another one. He does a lot of good things, but he hasn't gone that next level. So I think they're all sort of, they're all capable. That's why I was excited this season. I was really excited with their opportunities this year. I thought that, you know, there's one, probably one spot available in the bottom part of the top four, and I thought maybe they're that fluker's chance. But now they're no hope at the moment, and then you start looking at where to from here. It's tough when you're in this situation.
Two dangerous tackles out of last night. The first one, Jack Higgins on Alir, Sam.
Yeah, and I suppose we can debate whether Alir contribute, and plenty are already, contributing to this by kicking and all of that, and he's in the motion of kicking, but it's still a dumping motion from Jack Higgins, and Alir's head still hits the ground, and he has failed his scat test in the aftermath. So if you run it through the table of offences, it's rough conduct, obviously. It's careless, it's high contact, and given the concussion, I'd say at least high impact, Jared. So that's a two-week suspension through the table of events. If you look at Tom Barris, that was medium for a dump tackle on Michael Walters, and Walters' injury report was clear, and he's doing a week. So we'll get to Barris later, won't we, with a good behaviour bond. But just with Higgins, I think it has to be two if you run it through the offences. and he's failed the concussion test.
Yeah, so standard practice on concussion for a couple of years now has been severe.
Yeah, well, it has been. Yeah, and it could be severe. That's the next rung up, of course, if he's going to miss some football. So that trips into the three. And then the decision of Michael Christian is whether he chooses to send it up or whether he just gives it the three.
So I think it gets graded, but I do think there's... it's the second week in a row. I feel huge sympathy for Higgins in this scenario. I think there's a whole lot of things that conspire against him, and a tackle that wasn't going to end like that ends like that.
So this is where I come back to intent. I don't think at any stage of the tackle was he intending to dump him until Allaire put himself in some weird positioning trying to kick the ball.
So he was just dragging him to the ground?
Well, he was taking him. He's a big frame. Mm-hmm. You've got to put all your effort into getting him down. I don't think he was trying to get him down on his head, but because he went for that kicking motion, actually kicked the ball, he was in a vulnerable spot and there was no other option. He just basically put himself into that position. So I can see Chris O saying, you know what, I can't see it being 3 weeks. I really can't. I think he'd be unlucky to be suspended, in my opinion, because there's mitigating circumstances. And every now and then you're going to have one of these. We're aware
He has to be cited, though, because Chris O's only got the boxes in front of him. Jack Higgins hasn't had a chance to defend himself. He has to be cited.
He has to be cited. He has to say that he's put him into a dangerous tackle. I'm saying
that's not a reporter. So for you, that's not a reportable offence.
For me, I can see reasons why it was more on Allaire than it was Higgins.
So the confluence of events is Allaire has to legally dispose of the footy.
Yeah.
The only way he's been held by one arm, the only way he can legally dispose of the footy is to kick it, which he does successfully, but it puts the axis of everything is just totally off in the moment that he goes to kick it. So I feel like the whole scenario conspires against Higgins to get a really unfortunate outcome.
Yeah, and Bix, I'd love your thoughts on this because the smaller player trying to get the bigger body down, I don't really think he was meaning to tip him. He wouldn't be able to do that, I don't think. But he ended up in that position, didn't he?
Well, generally in these, I'm closer with you generally in your thoughts around the head. I'm someone who thinks that concussion is the greatest threat to our game. And I think even when we say there's a whole range of events that ended up having it end the way it does, I still think this is a 2 to 3 week suspension. And the unluckiness is on Higgins and not on Allaire for, you know, we're saying maybe he shouldn't be suspended. Maybe Allaire's just unlucky with the whole way it goes. I'll go the other way. I'm just going to say, if we're going to protect the head, and last year 30 players were concussed from tackling and being dunged into the ground, I'm just saying, well, if it's unlucky, it's unlucky on Higgins and you have to sit down, but we just cannot have this in the game. We cannot have blokes, even if it's unlucky, having their head sort of driven into the ground.
Mm. Yeah, so you hold a really firm line, and if there are unlucky players along the way in this period of time, then so be it. I think there's merit on both sides of it. I do think...
It needs a new table, though. The head trauma doesn't fall neatly into our matrix.
Yeah, so I would fully expect it to be graded this afternoon and then go to the tribunal
and then argue
and
your
see
case.
Where we are.
Yeah. And that's fine. That's the process. And I'm sure they would. I would love to see them challenge it and argue it because that's the process.
They'll have no other option. You have to challenge. You can't just sit back and say, oh, we're unlucky. We'll take 3 weeks. You have to.
The other dangerous tackle was Farrell on Wilson. Which you and Luke Hodge instantly saw as, hey, don't play for the head into the ground to milk a free kick.
Yeah, I think this is something we've really got to come down on. I think we've got to put a serious fine. You've got to fine the faker, the guy who's pretending that he's been slammed, and the arm action, and then the motionless player on the ground for 2 seconds is enough to make us all go, he's in trouble. And then you go, oh, hang on, he's conned us here. He's conned the umpire into a free kick. Terrific, you got your free kick. But with all this other stuff that's going on with head trauma at the moment, we're bending rules everywhere. We're straining, you know, the old and the new thoughts on the game are getting strained. Everyone's arguing with one another because of what we've had to do. This needs to be stamped out quickly.
Yeah, so I think a fine is so difficult to arbitrate as to where and where not. So I was talking to somebody involved in the Charlie Cameron, Jake Lever case in the aftermath, and then the observation that the players are in each other's hands on both sides of the ball. So it's your obligation not to slap my head into the turf and leave me with concussion, which jeopardises my well-being and career.
Yep.
And it's my job not to fake the bounce on the ground or head on the ground to ensure that you don't get suspended. So you owe me a debt of gratitude and I owe you a debt of loyalty as well. It feels like a rare peer-to-peer moment. The players are losing on both sides of this if you do it that way. So I haven't been in this cohort clearly, but is there a way for the players to come together and go, okay, we understand the crackdown, but what we're not going to do is get each other suspended. Mm-hmm. So don't concuss each other where possible, but don't get each other suspended either. And whether there is a role with Paddy Dangerfield as the president of the Players Association and the collective of club representatives they have and leadership groups and players to actually take it peer-to-peer and go, let's not do this to each other.
That was my exact thought. This is an opportunity for the Players Association to come together and say, we don't need the AFL to fine us. We don't need them to tell us not to fake. And this is where the players should say, the onus is on us. It's hard enough for the umpires to get decisions right when, like you said, players are slapping their hand on the ground. And, you know, and I'll use Connor Rosie. He did it against Melbourne and got a free kick and kicked a goal.
Yeah.
And so Port fans can't feel too aggrieved because it's been going on for a little while and someone has to stand up and just say, no more. Like I say, this is exactly what you said. This is part of the arrangement that we have, that we are going to have a duty of care for your head, but don't go the other way and use it against us when we're not going to slam you.
I think the starting point might even be for Chris Hadder to have a mention. We've noticed there's been a couple of players faking on the weekend. We're putting Darcy Wilson up. We've made a phone call to St Kilda today. We don't want to see this again. Like, just naming them might be enough from that side of things. Just to say, hey, you're on notice here. We don't want to see this again. We've got to stamp this out because it's making too many seriously intelligent people look stupid.
And it's happening more and more and more by the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's recognising the concussion is different to everything else. Go your hardest in a marking contest. Yeah. If you want to propel yourself forward and play for a free kick, whatever.
Yeah.
But where it's this, the crackdown is we can't lose on both fronts.
No, like it.
Kingy, this is for you, mate. You've got the dirt file now. Each week we're going to highlight the fakers.
The dirt file.
You reckon I'm across the fakers?
The fakers file.
Exactly. Taylor Swift fakers going to fake in Kingy's future. All right, Anzac Day next. This is crunch time for Azito. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. And Freeway Motor Group, Cranbourne, Frankston, Mornington and Lilydale.
You're listening to Crunch Time, Azito. Over 100 tools for your home and garden. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. After a new Ranger or F-150, head over to Freeway Ford Cranbourne and test drive one today.
Anzac Day reprises the deeds of 1995. It's a draw.
Draw here. How do you sum this up?
Extra time.
I don't have a strong view for and against. I mean, I think it's a... If I was at the AFL, I'd poll the fans.
We fought for 120 minutes and we couldn't find a margin. I'll leave that up to others to decide whether we need more time.
I love competing. I love winning. I hate losing. So I would love to have played for an extra five or 10 minutes to get a result.
I think as players, we always want a result. So we'd play a few more minutes.
You're not disappointed, but you're not happy. It's sort of a sinking feeling right now.
Yeah, a bit of extra time would be probably good for the plot. Or even Golden Point would be a bit of fun as well. I know I think they do that in the under-18s. I remember playing in a few games like that. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you guys reckon?
What do you guys reckon, indeed, Darcy Moore? So it's the biggest draw since 2010, where the rules instantly changed around the grand final to move to three. Well, we now have 3 minutes each way as an extra time period, and then we would repeat that under the grand final rules. 93,500 people. That was my first instinct, was Brad's, was if you could exit poll 93,644 and ask them. That would have been a really worthwhile exercise. Is that as much as you wanted, or would we have gone to extra time? Would you have been prepared to risk losing to get the reward of winning and the decisive outcome? It just feels there are little moments that arise in the evolution of the game to ask, and I think rather than fearing the debate, it's worth just asking to see if we're happy where we've been all along. Bix?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one because I've struggled both ways. I like the quirks in our game, and every other game has extra time, and we don't during our home and away season. So I like that. But after the game, like when it happened, I shocked myself because I thought, oh, wouldn't it have been good if they played five more minutes or whatever to get an outcome? Because I'd sat through, you know, an hour and 20 and I felt like I wanted a result. So I'm not really sure, but I was listening to Dwayne's show yesterday, and then I noticed a poll that he put up on the Twitter on X, and there was about 211 respondents, and it was 87% said leave it as the draw. So that surprised me. I thought it might have been a little bit more the other way. So it's only a very small sample size, but a sample size nonetheless.
Where are you, Kingy?
Yeah, I come from a different space here, Jared. I hate this discussion.
Yes. Scars of the past?
Scars of the past. I was the fool hanging onto the footy in a drawn final. I'm not talking about draws at all. I'm still trying to get Dennis's image out of my head. It's been 30 years nearly.
You thought you could kick at 85 metres.
Here we go. See? This is what I'm talking about.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
So you put your head above the parapet yesterday, Sam?
Well, I'm not surprised at all by Bix's numbers there. I'm lucky to be here. I was nearly lynched when I left the studio, even for raising it as a conversational piece. There are a lot of unhappy people there in the leave the game alone basket. I mean, I didn't think, even if you straw poll the players, and I reckon 85% of the players would want it because they're competitors. They're out there because they are desperate to win. And for me anyway, watching just a magnificent game, magnificent spectacle, just left a bit of an anticlimactic aftertaste in my mouth. And as a supporter or a fan, even as a neutral, how can you phrase it like this, how can you not want more of that? How could you possibly sign off on, right, that's it, dust the hands and let's go home? How can you not want more of that?
So the Pacers and the Bucks were tied together at 111 apiece at the end of this morning's NBA game. They didn't all go home. They went, oh, actually, the next bit's going to be the very best bit.
So, it's one of our results, though, Jerry.
It is. We have three results.
We have three results.
That's totally right. So the one question I had was, now that we do it for finals and grand finals, so again, somebody associated with last year's grand final said to me in the lead-up, they didn't know whether to raise in one of their meetings, hey, by the way, if this is a draw, this is how extra time works. It's 3 minutes either way. These are the rules around it so that everybody would know. And I just covered a Super Bowl where evidently the 49ers players didn't know.
Had no idea.
And they play extra time in the regular season. So whether we are depriving the participants of the chance to play in extra time and to observe extra time so that when they get it on the day that it absolutely matters most.
That's
they're actually
well
versed in it.
That's what I needed,
yes,
Jared.
So you wouldn't do that.
I was robbed.
That's. I feel so separate to the entertainment debate. Yeah. That was the little bit I wondered about. We used to have three different ways where we would resolve: is draws, extra time in finals, and then a replay. Now we've got commonality around the finals. Whether we should think about overtime commonality all the way through, so you get to experience extra time before it's for all the marbles.
Don't mind it. Don't mind the logic in that.
Yep, you're assuming, though, the players will actually learn the rules of coach players. And some of them just aren't interested. Even last night in the Port Adelaide game, Charlie Dixon gave away a 50-metre penalty and looked bewildered as to the reason why he didn't come back the 9 metres. He said, well, he marked it here. And he pointed to, you know, a metre inside the boundary line. And so don't assume, Jared, that players are interested enough to learn all of the rules.
My favourite subset of rules are the ones the players don't know. Yeah. And the 9 metre rule is right at the top of that list.
And they're still working out rushed how to actually get the ball through the behind. Still coming to terms with, am I under pressure or not?
And you tried to kick a drop punt from 85 as well.
That's true. Is mean. What did you make of the whole thing? There was so much of what makes the game great tied into that.
Yeah. Well, the game itself was a cracker, wasn't it? The start was electric. Yeah. They kicked the first five goals, and they just looked like they just had total control of clearance. Anytime the ball went in the contest, they just hammered Collingwood, and I thought, wow, this is over. The game looked done, and they're constantly showing Craig McRae on the bench, and he didn't look rattled. He looked concerned, obviously, but he knew he has this unbelievable belief in this group that they'll find, as they did the previous week, they did again. I marvel at Nick Daicos, and I know we talk about him a lot, but he just gives you so much content, doesn't he? Like, when the game needs to be swung, he's always the one. Bix, when they had to launch a comeback in that late first sort of to mid-second term, he was the man. And that's why we elevate him the way we do. because he doesn't do it when they're downhill skiing and five goals in front. He does it when they need the game to shift.
Well, and the other thing that he has this look about him is, give me the ball. Yeah. And it reminds me of Nathan Buckley. Nathan Buckley was like that, where just give me the ball because I've got so much self-assurance that I know that I'll use it well. And his teammates know that he'll use it well. So they do give it to him. And he just makes great decisions. He executes well. And I still think, even late in that game, I thought Jordan DeGoey did some nice things as well. And I think he's now going from, you know, well, he's already elevated himself, but he's going from a guy who has some ups and downs to being a much more consistent player now, and his reputation continues to grow as well, I think.
Yeah, so if you just look at the clearances, plus 17, contested possession, plus 22, like scores from clearance, 43 points. That's in their top dozen performances for the last 5 years. For Essendon, they've only had three better score differentials from clearance. So, you know, the plus 34 points on Thursday, they've only had three better in 5 years. So it's not just a good performance; like, it's right up there. So we've talked a lot about Zach Merritt, you and I, every Monday, about what he's doing to this group and how they're starting to come with him. And his standards are not, hey, follow me. It's, hey, let's do this together. There's a bit of a shift in the psychology of Zach, and it's working. I think what Brad Scott did with Nick Martin late was significant, putting him to half forward as an extra on baller slash forward half player, and I wonder whether that is him. Is he a centre forward player now? They're the most valuable commodity in the game. Those centre forward, Heaney, Petrarca, I don't know. Stringer's certainly that. He was terrific as well at centre bounces. That style of player, Bix, I just wonder whether Nick Martin can also be a weapon that they can use in this fashion.
Well, what he has, excuse me, he's got this amazing finishing ability. He kicked the last goal in the match against Adelaide, which was a really good shot from the 50-metre line on the run. He kicked that brilliant goal in that game. And not everyone can do that. Not everyone has got the ability to have that composure and poise with the way they use the ball, particularly around goals, particularly at big moments in games. So I heard they questioned Brad Scott about it after the game, and it had a little bit to do with the sub, but it was still a nice move, and it gives you confidence to know that he only has to have four or five touches inside that front half of the ground. One he puts to the advantage of his teammate and they kick a goal, and the second one he kicks a goal himself. So those players are really important.
First half, Essendon defensively brilliant. No, zero goals from Collingwood in the defensive half. Second half, five goals. So there's a consistency issue. They're working on it. They're getting better. But that's what I keep referring to until defensively they become the first half product, not the second half product, they'll be a serious player.
Gee, Bix mentioned the coach Brad Scott and the sub. Geez, he wound up on that. Probably as vocal as I think he's been on it, and he's had a few cracks at it as well. This is in light of Harry Jones coming off in the last quarter. No concussion, no facial damage, but the sub was there, so the time pressure in having to make a decision. So Brad's always been against the sub. And the argument is that it puts more pressure on the club doctor as opposed to less pressure as well. So when he was at the AFL, he was surprised that the clubs voted to keep it. Now that he's on the outside, he's even more vocal with it, Jared.
All right, more on Anzac Day as we work our way through. Super Saturday thanks to Super Groups. So it starts in Tassie with the Kangas and the Crows. Ooh. And then the MCG will be pumping for the Cats and the Blues. And then a high consequence match in Perth as the Dockers and the Dogs meet to finish it off. If you're heading to any of these games, SEN Stadium. So this is the new generation technology. It no longer relies on the Wi-Fi. It passed the ultimate test on Anzac Day. If you're in the terraces, take your earbuds, spread the word, and correspond with us as it's happening. So 0433 98 11 16 with your experiences of SEN Stadium.
That's awesome.
And we'll give you a shout out as we work our way through the various venues this afternoon. And also Live Golf from Adelaide, which looked absolutely phenomenal yesterday. That's on the SEN app. There's netball with the Mavericks playing the Fever tonight, and there's EPL West Ham playing Liverpool. So you can drown in choices today. From 1 ton to 8 ton supergroups are the masters of Kubota excavators.
You're listening to Crunch Time, Azito. Over 100 tools for your home and garden. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. After a new Ranger or F-150, head over to Freeway Ford Cranbourne and test drive one today.
Was viable for the hand pass to Goey. Kicks inside 50. Elliott! What a mark! What a theatre to launch like that! It's a screamer that will last for generations on this day.
right on top of the shoulders of Mackay. Picture perfect uprights. Jamie Elliott, one of the all-timers.
It's a moment that will probably rectify the pie warmer for the mark of the year, won't it?
Yeah, it should. $10,000 and the year's supply of pies as well. Yeah, I don't think Harry Himmelberg, I had a chat to Harry on Friday, put the pie warmer, all the pies to good use. He's got some work to do, Harry, to catch up with that mark. That was a heck of a grab.
Happy with your form, Jared? But when you see a mark like that, the onus on the caller then to elevate it to mark of the year is significant.
I think.
Are you happy with how it went?
I feel like it's the best mark I've called in 20 years.
I'm not worried about the best mark. You're happy with your call?
It's about the mark.
Are you happy with your call, Jared?
So I think if we're not going to have a car for it.
Out of 10.
Virgin are the sponsors.
Yeah.
Like a round the world ticket so that we could go with that's the mark that'll go around the world and Jamie Elliott's going to go around the world with it. It has to be a more substantial prize than the $300 pie warmer.
Oh, because
also, one for the high flyers, Jared, as well.
Yes.
Like I like the Virgin reference.
Yes, yeah. That we have to do better. I don't know why we went away from the car because it was such an intricate part.
He's dropped the car.
Yes, it was a beautiful part.
He's dropped the car.
It was a beautiful part of our language.
Out of 10, Jeff.
Go away. just a closing word on the Collingwood side of things. Kingy, they're split the ledger. They're 3.5 out of 7.
Yep.
Their starts 2 weeks in a row have been a bit underwhelming, but they've got themselves going.
Yep. They're playing the long game of she loves me, she loves me not. You love them for 20 minutes, then you hate them. You look at the next 20 and you go, well, what's going on here? They look, they don't have the same zest and the same energy, but when they do, it's frightening. So I don't know whether they're going to be this team until they see the finish line in the back half of the year and they go, right, let's go and ramp up and everyone sort of comes for the ride or are they just going to cough and splutter all year? You generally see the cough and splutter hang around a bit too long, Bix.
I tend to think what you mentioned around when you get to the back half of the year, you get the sniff in your nostrils again and you remember what it's like. And I think that they rely so much on their pressure around the footy, which helps their defenders to be able to play off their men. And I just feel like that pressure hasn't quite been there at times this year. So I'm confident come the back half of the year, they'll find that again and they'll start to sort of ramp that up. So if I'm a Collingwood fan, I'm not too worried at this stage.
And it's a glorious day, isn't it, Sam, is to have the echoes of 95. This is where the draw worked for it. 93,500 after 95,000 last year. The reverence around the half hour leading up to the siren.
I love it all.
From the motorcade to the ceremony.
I love it from the moment before the sun even comes up. This is the significance of the day, which I think is just to get away from sport. The significance and the reverence and how serious we take it all, and you see the younger generations coming through now wearing granddad or great grandmother's medals. You go to the services, and then I think sport, which for a long time we forget, struggled to find its place in it all, and now it's a seamless part of the day, I think, which is magnificent. And the football clubs and the AFL do it such justice, I think, as well. So, yeah, we had a game live up to it yesterday. It was an amazing day. Great day yesterday.
Well, I don't know if we often say how proud we are of our code on these occasions. Like even Anzac Eve was terrific. You know, the horsemen going around doing the lap with the lit torch was just amazing. I think other codes look at us and say, how have they done this? Full stadiums, you know, it's the talk for days.
And the last post, so to watch Craig McRae and his emotions spill over out there as well. I mean, it's such a powerful day, isn't it?
And the draw, it was terrific.
Yeah.
And the only other thing I want to add to it, it's a unifying day. And we haven't had the opportunity to say that very often, really, you know, in recent times.
Yeah, they feel like the most unifying moments that we live each year around those ceremonies. Mm. And the flow from the Anzac Eve at the G to the Dawn service to Gallipoli, which was shown on the big screen, and then for the service at the MCG. Mm. It's a weekend that sport has found its place in rather perfectly. To the events of Canberra, where do the Brisbane Lions find themselves at 2-5? And in the game that Christian Petrarca would have gone to bed at halftime if he wasn't being forced to play. It's a stacked crunch time, given we've had 4 games already in Anzac round, and we shape up for 2 big ones today. Carlton and Geelong at the MCG, and then over in the West, Fremantle and the Bulldogs. There's ramifications dripping off that game. Crunch time is for Azito. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. And Freeway Motor Group, Cranbourne, Frankston, Mornington and Lilydale. Mark Bickley and David King are our experts in place today. Gerard Waitley and Sam Edmonds with you. We've looked back on the draw of Anzac Day and Port Adelaide's victory over St Kilda last night. The hot seat is really clear for Razorback 4x4. There's nothing like Razorback 4x4. On the means test last week, Kingy, we had the Brisbane Lions sort of on spec as the big issue. Would we be shortly be talking about them not only as missing the top four should they lose in Canberra, but a risk of missing the eight? And it felt like we were propelled there on Thursday night.
They're a hard watch at the moment, aren't they? They just look like, I don't know whether they've got the investment. They just look really dull. They look like they're playing a plain brand of football. There's no real enthusiasm. There's no spark. It's just difficult to see them getting out of this. This is the challenge that Chris Fagan's got now. And I don't know whether they need to bring in a couple of young fellas just to get some enthusiasm back, just to get some run. It looked like they looked as slow as I've ever seen them, Bix.
Yeah, the second half, and it was exacerbated by the fact that they played the Giants, who looked fantastic, and they ran and they had speed. But I think also when you heard the press conference after the game and you heard Chris Fagan, he was listless. He, you know, sounded bewildered and without answers and you know, flat and tired. And it just didn't really fill me with confidence that he was, you know, like generally he's your favourite uncle. He's the guy who, you know, makes you feel like okay about yourself. But he really sounded as if he was pulling his hair out as well at what is going on.
Nine unanswered goals. That's the other thing, isn't it? The big run-ons of goals. They had their noses in front halfway through the second and then just totally obliterated. Nine unanswered goals, Kingy.
Yeah, it's not even about the scoring or the defensive holes. It's just the look of them. They just don't look the same side. And I've floated this a few times with you, Jared. I know that when the investment to get to a grand final and just miss out and like just miss out, like 4 points, what 2 minutes of footy, just miss out, is so large that I just wonder whether it's tipped them over the edge.
Deflating.
Just the hole in the pit of your stomach that it creates for the next sort of 6 months, and you've got to go through all that again just to get another opportunity. It is taking its toll, I think, on this group, and they've been there for a long time. The window doesn't just stay open. Will Ashcroft has a massive impact on this group, no doubt, and he's a huge loss. Coleman is a massive loss. He's their wild card off halfback. He does different things with the footy. So they're two players they really couldn't afford to lose for the year this year. But outside of that, I don't know how they get it back, Bix, apart from just challenging one another and seeing if you can find a response. But is that really going to hold sway?
Well, it's a good point you make about the grand final. And you look in my backyard here in Adelaide, who made the grand final in 2017, they haven't been near it since. 18 was a abject failure. 19, they tried to recycle the same players again, where they probably should have started the investment in the youth. Then they sort of burnt the place to the ground, and now they're sort of on the way up and spluttering again. So it's been 6 years for Adelaide. And Port Adelaide had that same hiatus after, they had their sort of really bad loss in 07. They went 5 years without making finals. So you don't have to look too far into history to see a number of examples of that. But, yeah, I'm a little bit worried about him as well, because some of the players that are playing well for him, Dane Zorko's been the one guy who looks like he's got a bit of fight. Mm. Where's that younger group of players, that sort of midsection Hipwood, McCluggage and Dunkley and those guys? I know they're trying, but they're the ones that really have to pick up the cudgels, and at the moment they haven't been able to do so.
And what can you see in individuals? So Lachie Neale, that's so the second time this year he's been fined for striking, and just the cumulative toll of effort on effort, campaign on campaign, and whether it just gets a hold of you for a while or it could be just completely exhausted. But to look at him as to go, he's feeling it.
Yeah, he is. And in the end, it goes too far. The investment bubbles over. We see it with Toby Green. Look, Toby was always going to bump someone just on the edge of outside of the laws last week. He's going to do something, because the game wasn't going the way he wanted it to, and he was frustrated. You're seeing the same with Lachie Neale. All the great competitors, the absolute nth degree
you know, top shelf competitors, they bubble over when things are not as they should be. I can see that with Lockie at the moment. I think he's a sort of leader that had probably grabbed the group this week early, Bix. I reckon it's almost the powwow time. Hey, what are we doing here? What are we doing with this season? Where are we going? We need more from you. We need this from you. Like a real honesty, you know, circle of wagons type meeting.
The other thing that is coming into focus is when you're a player and you've chased a premiership and, you know, it's the only thing in your world and you are so single-mindedly about making all the sacrifices and everything you can do, that realisation, the moment you tip over that mountain where you think, you know what, is our window closing now? And I'm too old now to have a rebuild and to be able to come back again and do it again. And I think of the St Kilda side with Nick Riewoldt and all those great players when they tipped over. And, you know, credit to Lee Montagna and Nick Riewoldt because they hung around, but others left. And you can look at Adelaide with Taylor Walker and Rory Sloane. Once it went down, they literally are resigned to knowing they're not going to play in a premiership. And that's a really tough thing mentally when you've set your whole sort of career and standing on being that, you know, achieving that one ultimate prize in life. So I just wonder whether that belief in self is starting to be questioned as well.
Yeah, once you lose that aura from the outside too, like Collingwood last year, I was looking, how do we match this? How do we play like that? I'm seeing that with GWS right now. How do we match that? Don't have a bad day against the Giants because you'll bleed for 20 goals. That's the sort of thing we're talking about. Once you look vulnerable, you're in trouble as a contender in our competition. When I look at Brisbane, I don't know where they get you. Where do they actually hurt you now? Because down back, they look gettable. Up forward, they don't look like that front six that we lauded the last 2 years. In the midfield, yeah, Lockie Neal, terrific. Outside of Lockie, I mean, Rayner went crazy for six quarters of footy.
Yeah.
Bailey's a big out. I understand all of that. But I just don't think it's there. It just doesn't feel like they're as complete as they've been.
The next 3 weeks are really interesting by virtue of the fact they should be winning them. And if they drop one of them, I mean, it's Gold Coast, it's Adelaide, it's Richmond, and then the bye. So they have to be turning 5-5 at the bye, or the alarm bells are really ringing.
Yeah, that was the opportunity, I thought, in Thursday night, as this was the chance to get on a run, and then having been so, well, they were abject. One loss from here, you spend your whole season just trying to find parity. And if you unexpectedly lose one of these games, the toll of that. So, the one thing I'd say about the Lions is I reckon because of their profile, it's possible to have a gap year just through sheer exhaustion of effort because they've got one Ashcroft and two Ashcrofts.
Yep.
They've got Coleman. So there's no reason to think that if they did have the dip this year, that's the end of it. They don't strike me as an old team. It's been a long campaign. But they have the rejuvenation of youth that we actually already know that will come back into their
team. They don't
really
lose anyone, do they, King?
Yeah, I like the idea of what you're saying, but I don't know if that's... So they only had three players younger than 24 and a half the other day.
Yeah, but...
Giants had 13. So it's all a comparison industry, really.
Yes, but I guess what I'm saying is we know that they don't have to go out and find their youth. They've got Coleman, Ashcroft, and they're getting the other Ashcroft,
and
Fletcher's coming up. So they already have on their list the wave of young players,
McCluggage is going to stay. I know they're not young players, but they're at the core. Berry's going to stay as well.
Yeah, you might be right. I don't know. I just think there's teams that are coming good now. I look at the Giants and I think, okay, you're going to come up against them. When they've had they had six players with 100 games experience this week. Brisbane had 16. When their six becomes 12, 14, 16, how the hell are you going to compete with them? They looked. I mean, we've got to talk about that.
Yeah. So the Lions are on the hot seat. Razorback 4x4, Australia's best four wheel drive seat covers with protection like no other. Were you drawn toward this being the win of the season?
Oh yeah, this was as good a performance as you'll see because they bought in the young fella, the gnome with
Darcy
the dome.
Jones.
Yeah, he was a ripper.
Where's his tent going up? We got the Tom Green fan club. We had the DJ tent next to it.
I bought a helmet. I got one already. They look terrific. Wasn't he exciting? Didn't he get them going?
And interesting, Darcy Jones holds the record for the agility test at the draft camp. You didn't have to look very far to see why, did he? He was zipping and zapping. And just look at their list profile as well. They got Harvey Thomas and Darcy Jones. They both look 15 for a start. One's 175, one's 176. Toby Bedford's 179. But they all have electrifying speed. You chuck Brent Daniels in there at 172. It's a bit of a breaking of the mould of this. You can't have all these little players, but they all, they've got a weapon. And you're just watching Jones and Bedford and Daniels around goals. They are so dangerous. And Thomas kicked two yesterday as well. But the speed and the way they get at the opposition and then run away from the opposition was exhilarating to watch. There's a couple of goals. They went the length of the field, chains of handballs. It was like the 70s again. The loose man the over 70s. the top, and end up with a Joe the Goose in the goal square. It was magic.
Just do something. The run and gun was unreal. So when you look at their profile, and we keep talking about, I reckon season 24 is about being able to punish. So they're the number one team that punish you from stoppage, and they're the number one team that punish you from intercept. So anytime they've got the ball, they're the best in the comp. Now, a lot of people say, oh, but they haven't played anyone. Well, they played a pretty decent team on the weekend and made them look second rate. The one player I would be resting Jesse Hogan in the next couple of weeks. Very similar to the Charlie Dixon discussion. He's never played a full season. He missed three games last year in a couple of stints. He missed four games the year before in three or four different stints. He missed 11 in 2021 in three or four different stints. He's the most targeted player in the competition. So when they go forward, it's Jesse. I think they just got to. Now you've banked your wins. Mm-hmm. Just manage your list. It worries me because they've got some pretty handy players to come back next week.
Yes.
Taylor, Toby Green, and Stephen Cornelio. You're going to find it hard to omit players.
Well, and the one player that I love seeing do some really nice stuff yesterday was Finn Callahan. He's pick three from the 2021 draft. He is just pure smoothness, isn't he?
And how do you get a left peg like that?
Yeah, and he's taken some time. He's 192, so he's the prototype size, and eventually he'll probably move into the midfield. 192, covers the ground, kicks it beautifully. And he has just been a slow burn, but yesterday, maybe in the absence of Cornelio and Green and others, he stood up and I thought he was excellent.
So their next, it's the Sydney derby next week against the Swans at the SCG.
It's never a good time to rest anyone. There isn't. No one ever wants to say, yep, that's the game. But I just think sometimes you've got to take it out of the player's hands. If he goes down, it'll have massive ramifications on their outlook.
If West Coast can rest Harley Reid against the wishes of a state, Jared, then it's possible.
But that's the flight over to Gold Coast.
Broadway. It's a very winnable game for them.
One of the biggest games of the season. Well,
but do you think it was a win of the year?
I felt like that's... The Giants have got depth that they've never had before, I feel. So maybe they finished at sort of 26 in the past. A lot of high ends. They go a bit deeper than that now. Yeah, the second half was absolutely startling.
Unreal. I was inquiring up north, where have you been hiding the kid with the lid? And they said, don't worry, we've got another one coming.
Phoenix
is on his way. Mm. I thought, not another one. Have we given them too many concessions this mob?
No, I don't know.
Well, they've
the Kangas need more, Jared. The Crows can do with a couple.
Through their player market, as people kept getting poached and they just keep
smashing
the arms. No, yeah. And they do play, I think they play the most attractive footy, don't they?
Oh, they do. He's done a great job. They're the most watchable team in the comp right now.
Yeah. To Wednesday night. This wasn't terribly watchable through the first half. And we on the outside weren't the only ones feeling it.
Oh, I wouldn't have wanted to be a spectator for that game. I would have gone to bed at halftime.
It was a pretty scrappy affair. You know, I think anyone watching the game, some of the turnovers, it was extraordinary, to be honest. It made a few people laugh in the box and certainly down on the bench. Like, that's just pretty unlike us.
If you didn't laugh, you'd cry. So that's what was at play there. Christian Petrarca and Simon Goodwin. Melbourne nutted out the win that they had to get with the class gap just opened up in the second half.
Yeah, it did. But I want to talk about Melbourne in a different way. So they're evolving in the way they play. So it's a bit clunky at the moment. There's some horrific turnovers. So that's not Melbourne. We haven't seen that before. But They're trying to play with a bit more freedom with the ball. They realise that if you can't score off that half-back wedge, that it's called the defensive mid-zone. So from the centre circle to the top of 50 in your back line there, that half-back counterpunch, if you can't score from there, you really can't compete. So you look at the Premiers the last 5 or 6 years, scoring from defensive mid-zone. Last year, number one was Collingwood win the flag. 2022 was Geelong. 2021, it was Geelong. 2020, it was Richmond. 2019, it was Richmond. It's that counterpunch when the opposition are disorganised and you've got full use of the oval. They Melbourne last year, were 17th post-bye at scoring from counterpunch off halfback. So they know this. They can't win it without this being corrected. So this year, they've gone to third in terms of their ability to turn that possession into a score. Now, that's a significant shift, Bix. And I like the fact that they're at least trying and exploring what this group can do. It looks awful at times, but they've got 15 weeks to get it right.
Is this because perhaps in years gone by, they've probably turned it over a bit deeper? You know, with Lever and May, it's probably inside the D50. So they've probably just tried to bring that up a little bit higher up the ground, which, as you say, makes it so much easier to be able to score from. You only have to get past probably 8 to 10 defenders as opposed to 14 if you turn it over in your own defensive 50. So, yeah, look, and doing so without, you know, the disruption of Angus Brayshaw so late, I think that has sort of unsettled them a little bit as well. Salem's been in and out and they've tried to reshape his role and he was pretty settled across that half-back line. So I think the longer this goes, and I think they're still trying to find their forward setup clearly, Petty's just sort of struggling in that role. I maybe thought they might get a little bit more out of him. They introduced a couple of youngsters into the front half who looked okay. So very much a work in progress for my Melbourne. And if you can continue to win whilst you're still honing and refining, I think that's a really good sign. And they've still got sort of plenty of upside.
That's what struck me is they had 8 players with 40 games or fewer and 5 of them single figures. So they're trying to change who they are, trying to evolve whilst winning. So Ross Lyon spoke about that last night. That's the trick, is if you can win and evolve, or Luke Beveridge is trying to re-emerge, is that was a really interesting profile for a team that's been right at the pointy end for a lengthy period of time. They are trying. They're trying a lot, and well, they should be at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to look messy at times. And then in the end, you got 3 or 4 guys that just say, hey, we know how to win. But Max Gawn just knows how to win games. Christian Petrarca knows when closing time is upon him. Hey, we've got to get this job done. And they just find a way, don't they, Bix? And it's a luxury that – Max Gawn is a luxury that no other club has. Look, he just has an ability to stamp himself on the game. He's another one I've got on watch. So this year – so last year it was can Grundy and Gawn work and they split ruck minutes. So they got to the back half of the year. Now, whether you like the decision or not, it's not that discussion. His minutes in the ruck were managed by the fact that there was the second ruck there. That's not the case at the moment. I get concerned that in round 20, it's been a long year. So I wonder how they're going to manage Max over the next couple of months.
Yeah, and you can probably, you can spread that out to 5 or 6 other senior players. You talk about Max being super competitive. Then in the same breath, Viney, Petrarca, Oliver, and then go down back and you look at Lever and May, and they've just got enough competitors. Like you said, when it's time to put the foot down, generally they can do enough, particularly against sides like Richmond and the sort of bottom half of the ladder, they can still find that way. And if you can blood those players that you mentioned, Jared, at the same time, then that's a very healthy position to be in.
And what did Uze do? Uze tagged Petrarca, which Christian had a chuckle about in the aftermath. But that was a proper hard tag from Marlon Pickett, who used the old world tactics.
He was a throwback. You were talking about the 70s before, Bix. This was an old school tag, wasn't it? Go everywhere with him. I thought it was great. It's an interesting discussion. So the week before, Brisbane used the wingman. The game before, they had a week off. So 2 weeks ago, Brisbane used the wingman against Petrarca. It was Berry, it was Archie, it was Fletcher. So it wasn't just one player, but every stoppage, the wingman, instead of taking his normal position, would go and tag Petrarca at stoppage. And he struggled. It was his worst performance for a little while in terms of impact on game. He was the 15th rated Melbourne player that night. So he had to show to... Not, he didn't have to show, but I think these competitors wanted to show that I don't care if you tag me. I'm going to respond, and he did that. He did that, and I thought Marlon was very good as well. Now, Richmond just didn't have the forward 50 target to match it. They were on top at the start of that game. They were very good for the first 30 minutes, but Lynch not being there just leaves such a hole.
I love Petrarca's language after the game, though. They asked him about Pickett's tactics and that, and he just said, look, I love the challenge. It's something that I'm now dealing with, and it's great, and I'm now able to use that to put the opposition out of position to benefit the team. You know, the other way could have been, and talked about all the reasons why perhaps he hasn't impacted the game as much to the extent we are used to from Christian Petrarca. But I just love the fact that he sees it as a challenge. He's taken it on. And, you know, if any other taggers out there, they're looking at, you know, can I upset him? Can I get under his skin? Does he dislike being tagged? He just said, oh, well, that's the challenge with being good effectively, and he's just going to get on with it. So from a coach or from a supporter, watching your best players talk like that, I just reckon it was great messaging.
The washout from that game, Sam. So Hopper injured again and Pickett with the fine.
Very curious explanation too on the tape from Adam Uzo that might have been his leg might have been strapped too tightly, and then he'd never done a hamstring before. He didn't know how it felt. And you saw him try to play on under discomfort. He's had an injury-interrupted year already, so that's a savage blow for a club who's had many of them. But I was taken to Disco Turner. We've just got to talk about Daniel Turner. Max Gorn might be many things. List manager, he is not. To confess with you on Fox, Kingy, that he told him out on the field, you've just walked into an eight-year, $1 million-a-year contract. We've been looking for this sort of player for ages, and here he steps out of the VFL. It was awesome.
It was awesome. Well, it is exciting when these young kids, we talked about the young blokes up at GWS, when a young player comes in and does that, it's exciting for everyone. You can see a lift from the senior core players at Melbourne, and the fans just, oh, we've found one.
And another disco running around too, so that's straight out of Bix's 70s as well, so it's another 70s flavour.
Retro round.
Yeah.
The fine for the punch of Pickett, so this had a ripple of debate in the immediate aftermath.
Yeah, so $3,750 was the fine for that one. Was it a tummy tap? Was it something more substantial? I thought they got it about right, although it's been measured up with many other punches that are off the ball, in contest, out of contest. The AFL sort of painted themselves into a bit of a tight spot with some of those comparisons already this year. But I thought it was on the money, Jim.
Where are you, Bix? Are you a hardcore on the punch, or each just gets assessed? What's your view in that spectrum?
I think Pendlebury should have been suspended for one game. I think this one here is a one-game suspension as well. If you punch someone when they're not looking, or they're not expecting it, or, you know, you're not actually contesting the ball, it's just not something we need in our game, because what ends up happening is Andrew Gaff swings an arm and doesn't mean to punch Andrew Brayshaw, but it bounces off his shoulder and breaks his jaw, and then we all get outraged at that. Yet we allow punching in our game, and I think Jesse Hogan was a little bit lucky as well. 100 metres off the ball, swinging a punch and even lightly collecting someone. It's just not something we need in our game. And every time we give someone a fine, and depending on, you know, these guys are earning lots and lots of dollars, for some of those people, it will be, who cares? I'll just go play next week and won't change my behaviour.
And it was the rule that was written tough over the off-season, the change. It was the Charlie Ballard inspired rule. So it read tough. It read as like, we are zero tolerance now, as Big says. We are coming for you in this regard. And yet it's been powder puff ever since. To answer your question, I wasn't surprised by virtue of what we've already seen this year. They've already made their bed. Now they've got a line at the AFL. And that's even without getting to Tom Barras playing the good bloke card at the tribunal as well, Jared. And he had to do it. He just didn't quite meet the 200-game threshold.
No, so and this is the folly of what happened the week before, is it's going to have to repeat all year until it gets closed down at the end of the season.
There was an opportunity missed. We talked about this on Monday. We haven't backed over this. There was an opportunity missed by Toby Green. Toby should have gone in and said, you know what, everyone goes the good guy card. I'm going the other way. If I wanted to kill this guy, I would have killed him. So the fact that I've done this, I've actually taken all the care I could to save his life here. I reckon they went the wrong way, Jared. They pulled the wrong card.
David Gray's take a bow for Tom Barras, though. He laid it on super thick. You know, he's got the two kids, a few philanthropic interests, the ambassador for White Ribbon Australia, the 16 Days in WA campaign, glowing character references. One happened to be from a teammate, but the other one was from the former chair, Russell Gibbs, of the Footy Club as well. But just 138 games of that suspension, Jared. All right, so you're 62 shy, Tom.
I love just how ridiculous it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wonder if Jeff Gleeson was sitting there going, oh, what have I done?
So, had to have been.
Every case is going to go an hour longer than it should.
Well, he wasn't on your list. You drew up the list of, what was it, 35
players? 35 players are
Tom
eligible.
Barris wasn't there. He should have known. He should have checked.
Brush up your community service, make sure it's all intact.
Now ineligible for life. That's it.
That's right. He's got his suspension.
Yeah, he's done.
He'll never get there.
What a shocking night he's had.
He's a bad bloke, officially.
All right, so we're working our way through crunch time. Those are the games that have been. The change in edicts for the goal umpires, mercifully, that's a good rule. The Harley Balick story, which is really serious. We'll drill into North Melbourne and Adelaide and then set you up for the big games on Saturday. Mark Bickley and David King in place for our Round 7 edition of Crunch Time.
You're listening to Crunch Time, Azito. Over 100 tools for your home and garden. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. After a new Ranger or F-150, head over to Freeway Ford Cranbourne and test drive one today.
The Anzac Round edition of Crunch Time. Today's games for Barclays Smokehouse. Ask for grandmother ham at your local deli. North Melbourne and Adelaide, Geelong and Carlton, Fremantle and the Western Bulldogs. If you are attending any of these games, SEN Stadium, the second iteration of it, doesn't rely on Wi-Fi. It's direct to your phone. It was a thriving success on Anzac Day, so we want you to spread the word around the terraces, pack your earbuds and keep us close and correspond with us as we go. I'll be at Carlton and Geelong with Andy Maher and Kane Corn. So if you're in the terraces at the MCG, we'd love you to stay close to us during what shapes as an absolute blockbuster. So maybe given we have Adelaide and North Melbourne royalty with us here, we should spend more time than I was planning.
I don't think we spend too long.
This feels like the week where the North Melbourne trajectory, you know, whether this is the darkest hour before the dawn or whatever it is, this is the time where you sit there and go, oh, is this working? And feel like this has already been a long period of time, but in this part of the rebuild, it feels like we're in the phase of, is this working?
I'll tell you how the weekend's gone for the Kangaroo fans, Jared. Everyone wants to tell you that Finn Callaghan was available when you took Jason Horne-Francis, who's no longer at your club. That's how our week's going. I think in the end, all you want is your club to make you proud. And it doesn't really even mean winning or losing or the result's the result, but they've got to perform, the Kangaroos, to a far greater effort level than they've been showing in the last 4 weeks. And again, I'm not worried about whether they beat Adelaide or Adelaide beat them. I understand there's some shortcomings with the list in terms of some players not absolutely ready for frontline AFL footy that are playing major roles down back, but that's just the lot at the moment. You can't use that as an excuse to not apply yourself at 100%. And I think, Bix, it's the same for Adelaide. You just want to see them put their best foot forward in terms of their effort levels, and whatever will be, will be.
When I look at North Melbourne, I reckon the game against Fremantle is, if you're a North fan, you can wear that because they took the game on early and they got through a couple of times and they scored and they found themselves in front. Then, yeah, they got run down and they lost that game. But you walk away from that saying, well, if that's what we're going to see and eventually, you know, 1.5 quarters will turn into 2.5, will turn into 3, and then we'll start to get some consistency once those kids play 30, 40, 50 games. That's what I think North fans want to see. But they haven't really seen it since that game, which has been the really disappointing part. And then you talked about that effort. Stuff. The effort stats are the things that anyone can bring. Whether no matter what skill level you are, you can bring the energy and you can bring the effort. And for Adelaide, it's a little bit opposite. Adelaide have had 4 years of that and they've been slowly building. And last year they got to a point where they were competitive against the top four teams and they had 11 wins and they had some close losses. So the expectation was to improve again. And they've actually regressed. And the players that have played 30 to 70 games and they've invested in over the last 4 years, now the question marks are they the right players? And that's a really, not a great position to be in for a fan of that footy club when you say, we've been told to be patient with this group of a dozen players and get 50 to 60 games into them. And now we realise that maybe we've put the games into the wrong people. So what does that mean? Does that mean we have to rub those guys out and start again? And I think that's where there's this doubt around Adelaide, and you're looking at players like Chase Jones and Ned McHenry, and Luke Pedler comes back into the side. He's a pick 10 and people had really high hopes for him. Himmelberg gets another chance. He's been around the club for 7 seasons and they want him to come back in and see if he can establish himself. So there's just so much uncertainty around Adelaide at the moment, and they're
They just haven't played with any consistency this year. And unfortunately, some of their senior players, who they did rely on heavily last year, Walker hasn't quite been at the same level. Brody Smith finds himself out of the side. He's injured this week, but hasn't been in great form. And so some of those, you know, even Jordan Dawson, who was outstanding last year, has just been battling away this year without being super brilliant that we come to expect. So there's still so many question marks around Adelaide and what the future holds for them, you know, not just for the rest of this year, but then the year after.
And this is that they just have to win today.
Because, exactly.
Don't they? Yeah. Like, you can't come back to Adelaide tonight if you've lost, knowing there's a showdown on Thursday. It's
wow, the pitchforks will be out.
Yeah.
burnings and public stonings will be being called for if that were the case. And I think Adelaide last week, that's why last week Adelaide, it was such a big game for them. I think they felt they were going to beat Essendon. They would then beat North Melbourne. They would come in, you know, this is on the back of a great win against Carlton. They would come into the showdown with three wins behind them. And I think that it really flattened them and the coaching staff, I think, when they just didn't play at halftime, you know, 21 inside 50s to 42 or something ridiculous like that, where you're just not competing. And the other thing that's been really intriguing about Adelaide, the losses they've had against Geelong and Essendon and a couple of other teams, Melbourne, they've actually been in front. They've found themselves in a hole, but they've got back in front in, you know, deep in the second half, whether it be the third quarter or late in the third quarter. And then with all the momentum and all those games have been at home with the crowd behind them, they just haven't been able to find a way to get it done. So that's been really disappointing. And I think it's left Matthew Nicks scratching his head a little bit as well.
All right, so that's the first game to go. Geelong and Carlton at the MCG is just a ripper, isn't it, Kingy?
Can't wait. I really can't wait. Footy's been brilliant this year. And to see Geelong do what they're doing, everyone recognises what Chris Scott does. His goals are actually the defensive goals. That's what he protects first, and then we play from there. So how are they going to cope with the big monsters of Mackay and Curnow? That'll be a fascination. Then you look in the midfield and you've got Cripps and Walsh has come back in ripping form. 70 touches the last couple of weeks. They were unbelievable from centre-bounce clearance last week, and we showed some vision of how they're pulling back to own back position, if you like, on their opponents to try and get as much space as they can, because they're coming out of stoppage out the front these days and looking like the model we saw, you know, when they really got things going last year. So I'm excited by that. And then to see Jeremy Cameron again, how do you match up against Jeremy Cameron? Do you put time into Grind Myers? Look, those sorts of discussions are easy and flippant for us to have, but they've been planning this all week. So what does Michael Voss do about Jeremy Cameron? Will we find out in, what, a couple of hours' time?
Yeah.
I love the matchup. And the thing that's really blown me away about Geelong this year is their selflessness. The amount of times Myers, Stengel, Close, they're 45 metres out, steady, no one in front of them, but they'll do a 15-metre pass to Cameron or to Hawkins or to someone else, and you feel sorry for the key defender. They end up giving up the goal, but there's just no way you can stop it. And just they're giving themselves really high percentage looks at it, and they're generally excited for each other, you know, to be able to score. And I feel like that just feeds into this sort of great sort of team feel. And I thought Collingwood had a little bit of it with Bobby Hill against Port Adelaide. I just love what that did for the team aspect. And it just gets some real feeling there. And I just look at Geelong and I see a really happy, content side that are really enjoying their footy at the moment. And I'll put my hand up and say I didn't have them in the eight at the start of the year. I thought they were going to find it really tough, but they've just super impressed me in the way they've gone about it. And Chris Scott, as you said, he's a genius.
Sam, in terms of Carlton's availability, so early in the week it looked like Zach Williams was highly unlikely.
Yep.
And Jacob Wiedering said to me on Tuesday that he felt like he would definitely get up.
Well, so, if neither of them got up, that would have been five of their starting back six sideline, given McGovern and Sarter also in that long injury list as well. So they were up against it. They've been named. I think you're right. It was always going to be a case that Jacob Wiedering will get there, but Zach Williams was far from a sure thing. So no change is probably a good thing for Carlton at the moment. And then in the next week or two, they get the Adam Cherers of the world back in and they can sort out some of their issues potentially. But it's going to be a great game. Two old midfield war horses going head-to-head in the middle. Two DeConings going head-to-head, hopefully. They've been named on each other, which is great. And two power-packed forward lines. So hopefully the game lives up to the hype.
Then tonight, it's Fremantle and the Bulldogs. Jeez. So this is huge for really obvious reasons. Fremantle at home, whittling down their margin for error. The Bulldogs play the response game. Now, what does it look like when you slot back into normality? Yeah, I'm so interested to know what happens here.
There's not a person in the world could pick what's going to happen with these two teams, Jared. You tell me which Fremantle's going to turn up and tell me which Western Bulldogs are going to turn up. Look, it's just such – they're wild card teams. I reckon Luke Beveridge must think, what am I going to get from Aaron Norton tonight? What am I going to get from Cody Waitman tonight? I know Bont will be 9 out of 10, but what about the rest? What are they going to deliver? And Fremantle, I don't know, they're a frustrating side to watch. You know, they can play some really good footy, but I think the over-investment in the defensive side of the game – keeps the opposition in games too long. And when they find their momentum and hit the scoreboard, the game all of a sudden gets away from Fremantle. So I think they need to open up and play a bit more expansive and trust their back line to get it done at high speed, coming back the other way every now and then to try and score, to try and get some motivation of their own with some scoreboard reward.
Mm. And we talked about Melbourne having those super competitive blokes. I'm so watching Fremantle this week. Who's going to respond after that performance last week? And that'll tell you who we need to invest in going forward. So young players, you want to see them stand up a bit more. I'm sure Andrew Brayshaw and some of their other leaders within that group will stand up and try and send a strong message. But then you look at the Bulldogs, and the Bulldogs, is there a team that has this gap so wide between their best and their worst so regularly? I just can't recall them. And you mentioned about Luke Beveridge, and I remember, you know, one of my coaches saying to me around when you've got a team that has players that have this giant gap between their best and the worst, you're always nervous as a coach. Mm. Give me the player that plays between 6.5 and 8.5 every week, and then I drive to the game comfortably knowing what I'm going to get. And that's when you look at the Bulldogs and you think of some of those players within that team, it's a 2 out of 10 one week and it's a 9 out of 10 the other, but there's just this big spread in between.
Today's games are rippers. Beat the lunch lockout with Grandmother Ham. A couple of the broader issues of the week, Sam. So the alteration has been made for our goal umpires, mercifully.
And common sense has prevailed. So you'll remember earlier this month, they were so exasperated and so frustrated that the goal umpires met with Josh Marnie, the football operations boss down at the AFL house, just to discuss the score review, something that they've been coached to call for. If there was even a smidgen of doubt, Jared, go to the review. So the frustration building, the perception that they'd lost their confidence, lost their mind to make decisions that they would have previously made. I mean, no one blinked at the goal umps for 100 years, and here they were getting booed and heckled in the stands. So something had to give. So the threshold has been raised. This week, and this has only happened this week in the lead into round 7, just back yourselves a bit more. So have the confidence. We're giving you the confidence now. So in many ways, we're going back to the future. We will review in the 45 or so seconds we have for the silent review while the broadcaster goes to an ad or the commentators are talking. So I don't know why they were reluctant to keep doing that, the AFL. From the best of my knowledge, there's time pressures with it. Maybe the process wasn't as thorough as an umpire calling for a review and play being stopped. It's a far better system now. So basically, the goal umpires felt, I think they've been mismanaged, to be honest. I think they've been really harshly treated in this situation. And the lack of clarity from the AFL is something that no one can really understand around the coaching of the goal umpires to even the messaging this week. Other than to say, you're going to see less reviews this week, and that has to be a good thing.
Yeah, there was an overabundance of caution, but it skewed things. You could see very early in the season that it was undermining the goal umpires. I was starting to wonder whether we'd have to put them back in white overcoats was the only way to win back public affection for them, but this should do the trick.
Well, the straw that broke the camel's back, the best of my understanding, was the Hawthorn-North Melbourne game with the triple, the consecutive calling for goal reviews. The crowd were losing their mind. The commentators, the players were exasperated. So I think that was the moment where they probably tipped over the edge and thought something's got to give here.
And the Harley Bellick story, that tragic recounting of that through this week, the raw emotion of the family, footy's place in that, how it sits in the overall review of the drug code that is taking place at the moment?
Yeah, so it's been brought back to the surface because SIA, Sport Integrity Australia, are probing the death of Harley Bellick, who played the 4 AFL games, all of them for Fremantle, before crossing to the Melbourne Football Club. Now, this is part of SIA's investigation into the AFL's broader illicit drugs policy. And it gained some real traction because Eddie Balick, obviously the father of the late Harley, did tell the Herald Sun that he explicitly blames the AFL and the policy for Harley's death after a long-time battle with substance abuse. He died in January of 22. He just turned 25. Problems coming through in his life all the way with substances and substance abuse. So there's no comment from the AFL this week, Jared. While we're covering it off, the AFL Players Association did say that for confidentiality reasons, they won't comment on the specific support they provide individual players, but it's known that these support programs were provided to Harley from the Players Association. Ross Lyon, very emotional this week when he was asked about him. Of course, his coach at the time at Fremantle, but he did say it wasn't the responsibility of the AFL and clubs to shoulder the full burden of player welfare. And he actually went on to say, with my parenting, I'm not looking for any organisation to take care of my kids, which is a pretty powerful and telling statement. So the AFL have been handed the findings, Jared, as well, recently into the review of their illicit drugs policy. Now, this review has been in the works since 2019. It stalled multiple times. COVID intervened as well. Finally completed by an external party. The AFL are now working through what changes they make on advice. They'll bring the AFL Players Association in with what is deemed to be their proposals. But how they strike a balance between welfare and being punitive to the point where some critics are going to be satisfied, I don't think they can ever get there. And the people you speak to say there's not going to be a lot of change. Welfare, confidentiality, still the absolute pillars, as the AFL see it, and the Players Association and the players, to the new policy.
Yeah, I think the week depicted just how challenging it is. So you have a medical and welfare model, which behind the scenes, people will tell you has saved lives. Yep. This is a life that wasn't saved either outside or inside football. Is I can't believe for a moment that a name and shame system would have served
Harley
during his playing days. So it's vexed and complicated. And your heart aches for everybody associated with it. How could you possibly critique a father who's feeling it as poorly as he is?
You can't possibly, and you can't possibly imagine. So, I mean, all parties are aware changes are needed, but what changes and to what degree and to what satisfaction, how they can possibly satisfy everyone is going to be difficult, borderline impossible.
If you're heading to Marvel Stadium this week, there are two new restaurants and bars located at Gate 3, Amphora and Friends of Fire. Elevate your game day dining experience before, during or after the game at these two new venues. All Survivor to finish off.
Oh.
To finish off crunch time next. Kingy used his seller's wild card quite brilliantly and Bix is still alive.
Doesn't matter.
But we did wave goodbye to Luke Hodge.
Oh, no.
Delight in recounting that next.
Listening to Crunch Time, Azito. Over 100 tools for your home and garden. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. After a new Ranger or F-150, head over to Freeway Ford Cranbourne and test drive one today. Time to play Survivor for Flight Centre. Book with your very own travel expert in store today.
All right, SEN Survivor to finish off crunch time. We lost Luke Hodge last week. He was just tipping against West Coast every time he came on. And he came completely unstuck. It was glorious. The WhatsApp group went off.
That's great.
Mark Bickley, you survived your first encounter with Survivor. Well done. Where do you want to go today?
Well, look, the obvious one would be to tip Adelaide against North Melbourne. I'm not going to do that out of respect for David King sitting opposite me. So I'm going to go with, and I'm going to stare down Luke Hodge. I'm going with the Suns to beat the Eagles. The Eagles travelling to the Gold Coast, I just feel like it opens up old wounds around the hub around COVID time where they just turned their nose up at that. They weren't happy whatsoever. Triggered. And I think that the Suns can get another win on the board.
Hub related. Is he allowed to tip against West Coast every time? Come on, Bix.
You used the Sellers wild card magnificently, just went for Carlton.
I've got to do I have to do it like Sellers again?
I think so.
Well, we nearly sacked Vossie last week. Doesn't matter. Move on. We're going Carlton again. We're going Carlton to beat the Cats. The Cats are no good. Haven't beaten anyone.
Oof.
They can't stop Harry. Can't stop Charlie. Doesn't matter.
Perfect. And Sammy, we lost you. You were preening around when,
oh, no.
When
I talked Port a big game.
Had a 5-goal lead over Collingwood.
I nearly texted. My thumb was poised. thankfully, I did not. I would have had to quickly recall it if I did. No, I went down swinging.
For Flight Centre, the travel experts. Just a little one on the way out the door around pressure in the game, Kinging. Something to
you
flag?
See, you see the number all the time come up on the screen and everyone froths when it hits 200. I went back and had a look at the quarters where teams have levels of pressure greater than 195. And from that point onwards, you're only a 50-50 chance of winning the quarter.
Oh, so you can over-index.
You can over-index. If you're 190 to 195, that's the sweet spot. 75% of teams are winning the quarter when they're in that sweet spot. So when you see commentators losing their minds because it's over 200, I think it's unhealthy to have that much pressure or that much of an investment in pressure. So it must be something to do with the overinvestment, the stoppage or the contest picks. I'm not exactly sure. We can't go that far with it. But if you see 190 to 195, that's the spot.
Lovely.
Well, the other one, of course, to think about is maybe you haven't got the footy if you're putting on so much pressure.
Yeah.
So, like you say, I'll be keeping an eye on that now. Thank you, David.
Do we need to address the elephant in the room?
I don't think so.
What happened at Ascot?
Hello.
Jared Whateley's survivor. Yeah, we went to Ascot.
Sure the name of the horse. First, got beat.
The first tip you've given us in 10 years.
Number two, generosity. He was paying $1.85 and it barely got on the... Yeah. Oh, oh, oh.
Yeah. So I think I've given you two survivors and gone out twice.
It's cost me a multi two generosity.
Still scarred by the Zayberg race Miller. A few weeks
back. Just quickly, out of 10, how was your call?
It's the Super Saturday for Super Groups.
Out of 10.
Another Super Saturday.
Yeah, tell me off air.
Kangaroos and the Crows. Then the MCG, the Cats and the Blues, and we finish off in Perth at the Dockers and the Dogs. SEN Stadium for the best call.
You were heard to have said nailed it.
Don't start. That sort of stuff catches on if you say that. No, I'm not wearing that.
Hey?
So if you're in the terraces, bring your earbuds, share it with a 0433 98 11 16. SEN Stadium working a treat, no longer relies on Wi-Fi. The SEN app has Live Golf from Adelaide, the netball with the Mavericks playing the Fever tonight, and then EPL West Ham taking on Liverpool. Bix, terrific.
With a double
great
cobra.
To have you with us, Kingy.
Thank you, man.